Good morning. It's time to read from the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, December 19th, 2020. My name is John Reif, and I'll be reading the news for you today. Here's what I'll start with. I'll start with the weather and the mini editorial, then I'll move to the front page stories, and then to the inside pages for stories of local interest. At the 20-minute mark, I'll do the opinion page and any letters to the editor. At the 30-minute mark, I'll do the obituaries, followed by sports and feature stories as more time allows, and then wrapping up with Dear Abby. Take a look at the forecast for today. Plenty of sun today, a high of 36 degrees, and winds out of the southwest at 6 to 12 miles an hour. Cloudy most of the time tonight, a low down to 22 degrees, wind south-southwest at 6 to 12, and mild with partial sunshine on Sunday, a high of 46 degrees, warming up quite a bit. Winds out of the southwest, 7 to 14 miles an hour. Sunday night's low of 31 degrees. Getting kind of nice on Monday, mostly sunny. Winds knocking down and mild, a high of 49. Wind starting out from the northwest at 12 to 25 miles an hour. Monday night clear and low of 24, and then partly sunny and mild on Tuesday. A high of 48 degrees. Winds out of the south at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tuesday night's low of 21 degrees, and then Wednesday cloudy, windy, and colder again, and a high only reaching 30 degrees for Wednesday. Taking a look now at the mini editorial for today. It's by Kimmy Strassner of Sioux City and reads as follows. I just want to express my thoughts. There are a lot of people in Sioux City who don't believe that COVID is what it is. I have tried to educate them on the facts, but that doesn't work. It's very frustrating. I just would like to say thank you to the medical staff for all that they do. Again, that by Kimmy Strassner of Sioux City. Front page story, House okays bill to avert shutdown. The House passed a two-day stopgap spending bill Friday night to avert a partial government shutdown, trying to buy time for frustratingly slow endgame negotiations on an almost $1 trillion COVID-19 economic relief package. Senate action wasn't guaranteed, but appeared likely before the midnight deadline. The House passed the temporary funding bill by a 320-60 vote as frustrated lawmakers headed for a weekend session. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said earlier in the day he was even more optimistic now than I was last night, end quote, but Democrats launched a concerted campaign to block an effort by Republicans to rein in emergency Federal Reserve lending powers. They said the GOP proposal would deprive President-elect Joe Biden of crucial tools to manage the economy. Believing a deal would be reached Friday, quoting here, would be a triumph of hope over experience, said a downbeat number two Senate Republican John Thune of South Dakota. Funding for the government was to lapse at midnight and a partial, low-impact shutdown would ensue if Congress failed to pass the stopgap spending bill. All essential federal workers would remain on the job, and most government offices would be closed on the weekend anyway. The two-day stopgap bill could be stopped by a single senator voicing an objection, but the most likely Republican to do so, Josh Hawley of Missouri, announced he would not block the measure after receiving assurances that direct payments for individuals were included in the broader measure. Democrats came out swinging at a key obstacle, a provision by conservative Senator Pat Toomey, Republican from Pennsylvania, that would close down more than $400 billion in potential Federal Reserve lending powers established under a relief bill in March. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin is shutting down the programs at the end of December, but Toomey's language goes further by barring the Fed from restarting the lending next year, and Democrats say the provision would tie Biden's hands and put the economy at risk. Quoting here, as we navigate through an unprecedented economic crisis, it is in the interests of the American people to maintain the Fed's ability to respond quickly and forcefully, end quote, said Biden economic advisor Brian Deese. Undermining that authority could mean less lending to Main Street businesses, higher unemployment, and greater economic pain across the nation. The key Fed programs at issue provided loans to small and mid-sized businesses and bought state and local government bonds, making it easier for those governments to borrow at a time when their finances are under pressure from the pandemic. The Fed would need the support of the Treasury Department to restart the programs, which Biden's Treasury Secretary nominee Janet Yellen, a former Fed chair, would likely provide. Treasury could also provide funds to backstop those programs without congressional approval and could ease the lending requirements. That could encourage more lending under the programs, which have seen only limited use so far. The battle obscured progress on other elements of the hoped-for agreement. After being bogged down for much of Thursday, negotiators turned more optimistic, though the complexity of finalizing the remaining issues and drafting agreements in precise legislative form was proving daunting. The central elements appeared in place: more than $300 billion in aid to businesses, a $300 per week bonus federal jobless benefit, and renewal of soon-to-expire state benefits, $600 direct payments to individuals, vaccine distribution funds, and money for renters, schools, the postal service, and people needing food aid. Lawmakers were told to expect to be in session and voting this weekend. Meanwhile, Wall Street capped a solid week of gains on a down note Friday as the wait drags on to see if Congress can reach a deal to send more cash to struggling workers and businesses. The S&P 500 fell 0.4% a day after it and other major indexes returned to record heights. The decline snapped a three-day winning streak for the benchmark index, but it still notched a 1.3% weekly gain that more than made up its prior week's loss. Hope that Congress may be nearing a deal to offer more financial support for the economy has helped stocks set more record highs. The S&P clocked its 31st all-time high this year on Thursday. Enthusiasm about vaccines for COVID-19, which investors hope will get the economy back on the road to normalcy next year, has also fueled traders' optimism. The S&P 500 index fell 13.07 points to 3,709.41. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 124.32 points, or 0.4%, to 30,179.05. The NASDAQ Composite gave up 9.11 points, or 0.1%, to 12,755.64. The Russell 2000 dropped 8.06 points, or 0.4%, to 1,969.99. Also, the Federal Reserve said Friday that the 33 largest U.S. banks are in strong shape despite the pandemic's economic shock. The banks have ample capital cushions girding them against unexpected losses, and that will also enable them to keep lending even under the most severe traits, the central bank said. The Fed disclosed the results from a special second round of stress tests that it added this year because of damage to the economy from the virus outbreak. Going back to the front page and the big story in the middle, Santa in the window in Sioux City. Display harkens back to bygone era. This is by Journal staff, Dateline Sioux City. Saturday is the final day for Santa in the window at the Warrior Hotel. Due to COVID-19, downtown organizers modified the usual Santa house, which gave children the chance to visit his temporary home in a downtown business and sit on his lap. From noon to 4 p.m. each Saturday after Thanksgiving, Santa takes a seat in the corner window at the newly reopened Warrior Hotel at 6th and Nebraska Streets. Children can walk up to the window, children can walk up to the window and speak to Santa through the window with a microphone. There's also a mailbox to drop letters to Santa into. Reagan Cody, executive director of Downtown Partners, said the setup is reminiscent of long past times when downtown Sioux City department stores set up elaborate Christmas displays in their windows. The displays once drew thousands of people. It shows two inset pictures, the first one showing Regina Rocha putting her Christmas list in Santa's mailbox to be taken back to the North Pole while Santa Claus sits in the front window of the Warrior Hotel on December 12th. From noon to 4 p.m. Saturday is the final time this holiday season to visit the Santa in the window display. The other inset picture shows thousands gathering outside the Yonkers Davidson store in downtown Sioux City during the holidays in 1945. Organizers say this year's Santa in the window at the Warrior Hotel is reminiscent of long past times when Yonkers Davidson and other downtown department stores set up elaborate Christmas displays in their windows. Next story from the front page. South Sioux City sues Big Ox. City claims operator is in breach of contract. This by Nick Heitrek, Dateline South Sioux City. A new lawsuit filed against the owners of a shuttered biofuels plant in South Sioux City says the company misrepresented its ability to successfully operate the plant and is in breach of contract since its 2019 closure. The city of South Sioux City is seeking a declaratory judgment to rescind a tipping agreement the city signed with Big Ox and rule that the city does not owe millions of dollars in unpaid monthly fees that lenders are seeking. The city also is asking that Big Ox be found in breach of contract and ordered to resume operations, including accepting wastewater from the city for treatment. Quoting here, the city remains committed to holding Big Ox entities responsible, but it also continues to seek the best path forward for the city, its residents, and the now idled facility that the Big Ox entities formerly operated, end quote, the city said in a news release announcing the lawsuit, which was filed Tuesday in Dakota County District Court. Big Ox spokesman Kevin Bradley did not immediately return phone or email messages seeking comment. The city says that Big Ox misrepresented its abilities since it first approached the city in 2012 to develop the plant in the Roth Industrial Park. When announcing its deal with Big Ox in early 2014, the city touted its agreement with the Wisconsin-based company as a green energy initiative in which the plant would convert organic waste into methane and also pre-treat the city's industrial waste and discharge it into Sioux City's regional wastewater treatment plant. The Big Ox plant began operations in September of 2016 and was soon subject to odor complaints from neighbors. The city said Big Ox began failing to fulfill its promises to the city shortly thereafter, when it stopped accepting certain wastewater in an attempt to reduce odors. The city said that in December 2016, a Big Ox employee drilled a hole in one of the plant's anaerobic digesters, causing an injury to the worker and a release of biogas, methane, and/or hydrogen sulfide. After initially refusing to allow environmental inspectors into the facility in early 2017, the lawsuit said Big Ox was found in violation of numerous state and federal guidelines when inspectors finally gained access. Big Ox shut down the plant in April 2019 after Sioux City declined to renew the company's wastewater treatment permit because of non-payment of outstanding fees, fines, and other charges. In January, Nebraska's regulators revoked Big Ox's air and stormwater permits because of a continual failure to comply with state regulations. Since then, the city says in its suit, Big Ox has made no effort to correct the violations, regain its licenses, and resume operations. The city said it believes Big Ox has abandoned the facility and, in turn, its obligations to provide wastewater treatment for South Sioux City. Because of that, the city said it should not be required to make the $225,000 monthly payments contained in a 2014 tipping agreement, which was an inducement for Wells Fargo Trust Company to provide financing for construction of the approximately $30 million plant. Wells Fargo has sued the city seeking more than $3.3 million in payments the city has not made since May of 2019. The city in October denied a claim Wells Fargo filed with the city, saying the company could not seek more than $2.6 million in its claim because it was not filed on time. The city also said it was excused from the monthly payments since March of 2019 when it placed Big Ox in default of the tipping agreement for failing to operate the wastewater treatment facility in accordance with the agreement. The city reiterated that claim in the new lawsuit, which also was filed against Wells Fargo and other lenders, and seeks a judge's ruling that the city is not liable for the payments because Big Ox is not performing its wastewater treatment duties. South Sioux City has moved ahead with plans to build its own wastewater treatment plant at an estimated cost of $45 million. Mayor Rod Koch, Koch, told the Journal in October that he has heard of buyers' interest in the Big Ox plant and the city remains open to buying it and seeking a third party to operate it. Big Ox still faces 15 lawsuits in Dakota County filed by residents living near the plant who said toxic gases from the plant backed up into their homes through the city sewer system and have caused health problems and property damage. The city of South Sioux City also is named in those suits. Big Ox also faces a federal lawsuit filed by a former plant neighbor who says the company is partially responsible for her husband's death and that odors and gases from the plant ruin their home, making it uninhabitable. A federal class action lawsuit in which residents living near the plant accused Big Ox of negligence and causing a nuisance was settled and dismissed in August. Lawyers have not commented on settlement terms. Judges have also entered at least 3 judgments against Big Ox for non-payment of claims to suppliers and others who provided services. It shows an inset picture on page A5 of the Big Ox Energy Plant, shown April 19, 2019 at the Roth Industrial Park in South Sioux City. The city has sued Big Ox for damages to compensate the city for losses it has incurred from the because of the plant's shutdown. Finally, from the front page, it's the Mr. Goodfellow, and today's donation is from Kneffler Chevrolet. The Goodfellow charity each year raises money to provide toys and books for thousands of Siouxland children during the holidays. Charlie is the 2020 Little Yellow Dog. How to help? You can mail checks to Mr. Goodfellow Charities, care of the Sioux City Journal, 515 Pavonia Street, Sioux City, 51101. For details on the front page feature, you can contact Angie Dye at 712-293-4274. Again, today's donation is from Kneffler Chevrolet. It shows an inset picture of the employees standing in front of one of the buildings. Kneffler Chevrolet has donated to the Sioux City Journal's Goodfellow Charity. Employees at the Sioux City dealership are shown taken October 28th. The goal of the Goodfellow goal this year is $135,000. Today, Kneffler Chevrolet has donated $1,000. About the donor, Kneffler Chevrolet is a family-owned dealership that has been around for nearly a century. Located in the heart of downtown Sioux City, this one-stop shop sells, finances, services, repairs, details, and supplies parts for new, pre-owned, and commercial vehicles. In the donor comment, "It all boils down to showing up for others," says co-owner Joe Kneffler. Whether it's connecting people year-round with the means to show up for those who count on them, like in the form of reliable transportation, or it's us finding philanthropic ways to give back to the community, it's so important to be there for others. In this case, Mr. Goodfellow Charities has been making the holidays merrier for Siouxland children as long as we can remember, and we are honored and humbled to be a part of it. Moving now to page A2. And today is the editor's note. The journal today continues its countdown of the top 10 stories of 2020 in Siouxland, as chosen by journal staff. The number one story will be revealed on December 27th, and the journal's annual newsmaker of the year will be named on January 3rd. Today's stories, it's number 7 of the top 10, and it's Nebraska voters green light casinos at state's racetracks. And this by Mason Doctor in Dateline South Sioux City. Voters in Nebraska this year approved a trio of ballot initiatives that allowed casinos at the state's 6 licensed horse tracks, paving the way for Ho-Chunk Inc. to build casinos at tracks in South Sioux City, Omaha, and Lincoln. In November, initiatives 429, 430, and 431 passed with roughly 65% of the vote. Initiative 429, the linchpin of the 3, is an amendment to the state's constitution that allows casinos at the state's licensed tracks. It was the culmination of a years-long effort by Ho-Chunk, the Economic Development Corporation of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, in collaboration with the Nebraska Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, the HBPA. Ho-Chunk is prepared to spend $300 million to open casinos at Nebraska's 2 largest cities and at the Attakad Park track in South Sioux City. In preparation for the projects, Ho-Chunk formed a new division called War Horse Gaming LLC to manage the new casinos. War Horse, in partnership with the HBPA, is currently drawing up plans for casinos at the Horseman's Park in Omaha, the Lincoln Racecourse in Lincoln, and Attakad. Some forms of casino gambling at these facilities is expected to begin during the latter half of next year, and full casino operations should be up and running by 2022. This represented a large investment for us, Ho-Chunk CEO Morgan told the Journal in November. I think this is going to be a huge deal for Nebraska. Proponents of the initiatives had long argued that untold numbers of Nebraskans crossed the border to gamble at casinos in Iowa and other states, leaving behind over $500 million per year. Opponents, led by Governor Pete Ricketts and former Nebraska football coach Tom Osborne, warned that the ballot initiatives would result in more bankruptcies, crime, and numerous other social ills rooted in gambling addiction. Horse racing is the oldest legal form of gambling in Nebraska, which was amended in 1934 to permit bets at licensed tracks. The Cornhusker State's tracks thrived for decades until neighboring Iowa welcomed its first riverboat casinos in the 1990s. From that point on, Nebraska's tracks fell on hard times. The famous Exarban track in Omaha closed down in 1995, and by recent years, the state's six licensed tracks were collectively holding just 53 live racing days per year, the bare minimum to maintain their licenses. The HBPA and Ho-Chunk have predicted that casinos will breathe new life into the faded industry. Construction on the new casinos is expected to begin as soon as next spring, and the Omaha and Lincoln tracks could start offering casino gambling within about 6 months. Morgan said it would take around 9 months to open a casino at Attakad, which currently has only a track. Again, that was the number 7 of the top 10 stories of 2020 for this year. It's time now for the opinion page, and today's other voices is from the Omaha World Herald, and it reads, "Feuding hurts the Nebraska Environmental Trust." The Nebraska Environmental Trust stands as one of the state's most visionary and successful endeavors. Since 1994, the trust has provided some $350 million in grants distributed throughout the state and supplemented with local contributions. Those projects have aided communities across Nebraska and bolstered the state's environmental health. The legislature has a duty next session to help the trust by clearing up the uncertainty over the appropriate criteria for awarding grants. The latest round of fierce disagreement over grant selection, for the second time this year, shows the need for action by Nebraska lawmakers. The first controversy this year centered on ethanol promotion. The trust board voted to defund $1.8 million for a set of high-scoring habitat grants and award the money instead to a lower-scoring project to finance ethanol pumps. More recently, the Nebraska Department of Environment and Energy has requested $3.7 million, which critics say would go toward regulatory action that falls outside the trust's proper criteria. The disagreements have pitted Governor Pete Ricketts against the group Friends of the Environmental Trust, which consists mainly of former trust board members and those involved in establishing the trust. The governor, by state law, appoints the 9 citizen members on the trust board. The other 5 members are state agency heads. One of them is Jim Macy, head of the Department of Environment and Energy, that's requesting the $3.7 million. The legislature writes the laws that determine the trust's duties, and lawmakers will be inexcusably shirking their responsibility if they fail to take up this issue during the 2021 session. The ugly feuding over the trust's proper function is harming the ability of this successful state organization to carry out its services to Nebraska. Part of the problem is a long-standing one. State officials and interest groups searching for a funding source for projects opportunistically attempt to use the trust, which is funded in part by the Nebraska State Lottery, as a convenient resource. Major controversy erupted in 2011, for example, over efforts to divert $7 million annually toward addressing various water needs in Nebraska. The value of the trust's work in partnership with organizations across Nebraska is without doubt. Consider a sampling of projects funded by the trust in 2019. New approaches to biodiversity conservation, cooperative efforts to strengthen water quality, including controlling nitrate leaching into groundwater, renewable energy storage, work to control red cedars and other invasive species, incorporation of cover crops in cropping systems, wildlife conservation, grassland enhancement, and pollinator support. For too long, the legislature has allowed controversies to harm the functioning of the Environment Trust. Next session, lawmakers must do their duty and at last provide the needed clarity in state law. Shows an inset picture of some marshland and grants exceeding $68 million from the Nebraska Environmental Trust have improved the state's water quality. And that is from the Omaha World Herald and other voices on the opinion page. Moving back now to page A2, One Sioux City class section moves online. No employees have tested positive. This by Brett Hayward, Dateline Sioux City. The number of positive novel coronavirus cases continues to drop in the Sioux City School District right before the holiday break, but there were still enough this week to necessitate moving one class section from in-person instruction to online learning. The pandemic impact trend in the district has been lessening in December, as the last week through December 11th, no class sections had enough virus cases to move to online learning, and no employees tested positive for the first time since weekly reporting started in early September. The district is continuing the Friday practice of releasing the number of positive cases determined within the district over each week. The newest recap of positive cases showed 4 students and 6 employees tested positive, while the numbers the prior week had 12 students testing positive. The class section that will move online for the final few days before break is at North Middle School. Additionally, there will be a change for the entire district in January, as the Sioux City School Board voted Monday to have a hybrid version of learning for the first 2 weeks of January. As of mid-afternoon Friday, the number of positive cases in the county was just under 11,370, or up about 400 over the last 7 days. There have been 153 deaths from COVID-19 in Woodbury County, up 10 from 1 week ago, although none were reported Friday over the last 24 hours. The release noted that for each positive case reported, contact tracing is done in conjunction with Siouxland District Health Department. Individuals who test positive, as well as any individuals identified as close contacts, are directed to self-isolate or self-quarantine and take other appropriate measures in accordance with state and public health guidance. District workers continue taking steps such as extensive cleaning and sanitizing places that are heavily used in buildings. Over 3 months, more than 24 class sections have converted from in-person to virtual learning. The December 4th recap of positive cases showed 3 employees and 5 pupils testing positive for that week ending Friday. The prior week that included the Thanksgiving holiday also had the same exact numbers, 3 employees and 5 pupils with positive tests. Those numbers are a considerable downturn from mid-November, which marks the highest number of cases of the fall semester. Over the week of November 16th through the 20th, the number of students who tested positive was 19, while the number of employees was 15. That followed the second week of November, in which 21 employees and 11 pupils tested positive. On November 14th, classrooms in 3 Sioux City school district buildings and all West Middle School pupils moved to online learning instruction as the novel coronavirus pandemic continues to grow in the tri-state area. The November 6th recap of positive cases showed 5 employees and 8 pupils tested positive, and the 2 class sections that moved online were at West Middle School. Next story, settlement secures Castle on the Hill trademark. The Castle on the Hill Association didn't receive any money in a recent settlement with a former Central High School building's owner, but it got what it was really after, full rights to its name. Under terms of the settlement agreement, the association and Castle on the Hill LLC and New Style Investment Corporation agreed to dismiss their monetary claims against each other. Castle on the Hill LLC and New Style also agreed to stop using the Castle on the Hill name in reference to the apartments housed inside the former Sioux City High School. "Our goal always was to get our name off their business. Our main objective was obtained," said Robert Deck, the association's attorney. The suits were dismissed December 10th, and New Style has 60 days to remove the Castle on the Hill name. The Castle on the Hill Association, an alumni group of former Central High students, and the developers had sued each other earlier this year when the association said New Style was effectively evicting the group by making it hard to exercise an option to buy the building. The association bought the building, which served as a school from 1893 to 1972, from the school district for $1 in 1976. In 2002, the association sold the building, located at 610 13th Street, for $1 to developers, who converted it into an apartment complex. The contract also included a clause in which the association had an option to buy the building from Castle LLC. In 2004, the association agreed to lease its gift shop space and the school's former auditorium for 15 years at $1 per year. That lease expired at the end of last year and was extended to March 1st. The lawsuit filed in March said that New Style, a Nebraska corporation with offices in Omaha and Woodbine, Iowa, that operates under a development services agreement with Castle on the Hill LLC, had interfered with the contract between the association and Castle LLC. Developer Todd Heistand said at the time that the alumni group's lease of portions of the building were making it harder for him to find a buyer for the property. The association was unable to raise the money to buy the building and ended its fight against eviction, vacating the building in August. New Style continues to seek a buyer for the property, a company spokeswoman who declined to be named said Friday. Though without a home, the association remains active, Deck said, and will continue to sponsor events and award scholarships. A famed statue of Abraham Lincoln has been removed from the building and is now displayed inside City Hall. Deck said that after the statue is touched up, a dedication ceremony will be held. It shows an inset picture of the Castle on the Hill Association member Frank Conkey looking as he looks down a south stairwell in front of the statue of Abraham Lincoln at the former Central High School building in Sioux City in December of 2019. Known as the Castle on the Hill, the building operated as a high school until 1972, then mostly sat empty until being converted into the Castle on the Hill Apartments in 2003. An alumni group has settled a lawsuit in which it received the rights to use the Castle on the Hill name. It's time now for the obituaries. Thankfully, the list is pretty short. Beginning with Ida Grove, Iowa, Connie Ray Price Johnson, 71 years old. Connie Ray Price Johnson died Sunday, December 13, 2020. Services are December 21st at 2 p.m. Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home of Mapleton, Iowa, is handling the arrangements. Burial will be after the service at Mount Hope Cemetery in Mapleton. Visitation will be December 21st from 12 to 2 p.m. at the funeral home, limited to 15 people at a time. Masks and social distancing required. From Lamar's, Regina Elnora Oltmans, O-L-T-M-A-N-N-S, of Lamar's, Regina Oltmans, 96 years old, passed away Thursday, December 17th. Arrangements are with Mauer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamar's. From Sioux City, Donald R. Tudehope, T-U-D-E-H-O-P-E, Donald Tudehope of Sioux City, 86 years old, passed away Thursday, December 17th. Per his wishes, no services at this time. Arrangements are with Morningside Chapel. And the final one for today, from Holstein, Homer G. Pete Steins. Mr. Steins, 83 years old, died Sunday, December 6th. Private service will be at Our Lady of Good Counsel Catholic Church in Holstein. Burial will be at the Holstein Cemetery with military rites. Visitation will be December 20th from 3 to 5 p.m. Arrangements are being handled by Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Holstein. Going back now to page A2, Sioux City man sentenced to federal prison for meth. A Sioux City man who distributed vast quantities of methamphetamine in and around the tri-state area in 2018 and 2019 was sentenced Friday to 10 years in federal prison. Tyler Hugh Clark, 39 years old of Sioux City, pleaded guilty February 18th to conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine and possession of a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime, according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Northern District of Iowa. In a plea agreement, Clark admitted that between January 2018 and July 30, 2019, he conspired and participated in the distribution of 500 grams or more of pure methamphetamine in and around the tri-state area. Clark was also in possession of a firearm to protect himself and his drug business and to further his participation in the methamphetamine conspiracy. Sometime in January or early February of 2019, Clark began getting meth from Omaha for resale in and around Sioux City. Each week for 5 months, he obtained roughly 2 pounds of meth until his source was arrested. After that, he found a new source and received about 3 more pounds of meth to sell. He had more than 0.5 pound of meth on his motorcycle when he was arrested in July of 2019. Clark was sentenced in Sioux City by United States District Court Chief Judge Leonard T. Strand to 120 months imprisonment, including 60 months for a conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine and 60 months for possession of a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime. He must also serve a 4-year term of supervised release after the prison term. There is no parole in the federal system. Clark is being held in the United States Marshal's custody until he can be transported to a federal prison. The case was prosecuted by Assistant United States Attorney Jack Lammers and investigated by the Tri-State Drug Task Force based in Sioux City, Iowa, that consists of law enforcement personnel from the Drug Enforcement Administration, Sioux City, Iowa, the Police Department, Homeland Security Investigations, Woodbury County Sheriff's Office in South Sioux City, Nebraska Police Department, Nebraska State Patrol, Iowa National Guard, and the Iowa Division of Narcotics Enforcement. Also involved in this investigation were the Sergeant Bluff Police Department and the Woodbury County Attorney's Office. Moving to page A4, Union and Yankton counties report additional COVID-19 deaths. This is by Mason Doctor, Dateline North Sioux. Union and Yankton counties in southeast South Dakota have suffered additional COVID-19 deaths. Union County's toll increased by 1 up to 28, while Yankton County's rose by 3 to 21, according to South Dakota Department of Health data. No counties in northwest Iowa or northeast Nebraska reported any more deaths Friday, though several suffered deaths on Thursday. Woodbury County, with 153 deaths, has the region's highest death toll by far. Woodbury County added another 62 new infections on Friday, following the 62 added Thursday, according to the Siouxland District Health Department. The daily tally of new infections in the county has ebbed compared to the large numbers seen on many days in November, when the daily tally was frequently in the triple digits. To date, more than 11% of the county's population, 11,749 people, have had a known coronavirus infection, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health data. Approximately 84% of them have recovered. The number of patients hospitalized with the virus in Woodbury County has also eased somewhat compared to last month. As of Friday, 38 patients were in Sioux City hospitals because of COVID-19, while another 22 people in the hospital have the virus but are hospitalized primarily for another health condition. Of that total, 60, only half of them, are Woodbury County residents. As a breakdown graph on the page, it's in A4, Siouxland COVID, first is coronavirus cases by state. South Dakota has 93,772 cases, Nebraska with 153,400 cases, and Iowa with 264,761 cases. And then a breakdown by county in South Dakota, Yankton County with 2,313 cases, 21 deaths. Clay County, 1,546 cases and 11 deaths. Union, 1,481 and 28 deaths. In Nebraska, Cedar County, 691 cases, 8 deaths. Dixon, 508 cases, 5 deaths. Wayne, 904 and 5 deaths. Thurston, 824 cases, 7 deaths. In Dakota County, 3,493 cases, 52 deaths. In Iowa, Lyon County, 1,178 and 21 deaths. Osceola, at 599 cases, 5 deaths. Dickinson at 1,626 cases, 13 deaths. Sioux County at 4,166 cases and 40 deaths. O'Brien at 1,500 cases but 48 deaths. Clay County at 1,467 cases, 10 deaths. Plymouth with 3,208 cases and 44 deaths. Cherokee County, 1,130 and 18 deaths. Buena Vista at 3,502 cases, 21 deaths. Ida County at 660 cases, 19 deaths. Sac County at 996 cases, 10 deaths. Monona County at 520 cases, 13 deaths. Crawford County at 1,995 cases, 16 deaths. And Woodbury, of course, in the lead, 11,749 cases and 153 deaths. More briefs on page A4. Cedaring ceremony set for dialysis unit. This Dateline Walt Hill, Nebraska. A cedaring ceremony is slated to be held Monday morning at the new dialysis unit in Walt Hill. The event will begin at 10 a.m. at Nida Gotha, coming here to live, is what that means, at 204 Main Street. Rodney Morris will perform the Cedaring and Omaha Tribal Council Chairman Everett Baxter Jr. will deliver opening remarks. Dr. Arvind Santos and the Sanford Medical Team will be available for a meet and greet. Light refreshment will also be provided. The Carl T. Curtis Health Education Center is opening the dialysis unit on the Omaha Indian Reservation to allow more patients to receive health care services closer to home. The unit will have 6 chairs and run 2 shifts on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The 70-by-40-foot building will house 2 clinic rooms where the nephrology team will see and treat patients, as well as 2 offices, a break room, and an isolation room. The unit's goal is to provide caring, holistic, patient-oriented health services to meet the needs of the community. On August 6th, the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska entered into an agreement with Sanford Health to expand dialysis services and appoint Santos as medical director. Next story on page A4 in briefs. Nebraska man enters not guilty plea to stabbing. This Dateline Ponca, Nebraska. A Wayne, Nebraska man has pleaded not guilty to attempted murder and other charges related to the November stabbing of a Wakefield, Nebraska man. Javier Zavala, 36, entered his plea Monday in Dixon County District Court to charges of attempted first-degree murder, use of a deadly weapon to commit a felony, possession of a deadly weapon by a prohibited person, first-degree assault, kidnapping, first-degree false imprisonment, and terroristic threats. He is accused of stabbing Ancleto Perez Ramirez, 34, in the back and legs multiple times on November 9th in the garage of a home on the 200 block of Highland Street in Wakefield. According to court documents, Perez Ramirez told investigators that Zavala came to the home and accused him of kidnapping his wife. After telling Zavala he did not know his wife, Perez Ramirez said Zavala punched him, knocking him to the ground. Before he could get up, Zavala began stabbing him. Zavala stopped stabbing him and asked him to get in his pickup truck or he would continue to stab him. As they were driving to Wayne, Perez Ramirez said Zavala told him he would spare his life and asked him where he could drop him off. Perez Ramirez asked to be dropped off at a friend's apartment in Wayne, and he was later taken to Providence Medical Center in Wayne for treatment. Zavala was arrested 4 days later. All right, next one. Ex-clerk who stole lottery tickets gets probation. This Dateline Sioux City. A former Sioux City convenience store clerk charged with stealing 19 lottery tickets was placed on probation Thursday. Brittany Britton, 27, of Sioux City, has pleaded guilty in July in Woodbury County District Court to 1 count of lottery theft. District Judge Jeffrey Neary gave her a deferred judgment, placed her on probation for 2 years, and ordered her to pay a $1,025 civil penalty and $90 restitution to the Iowa Lottery Authority. As part of a plea agreement, 18 counts of lottery theft were dismissed. Britton was seen on video surveillance taking the lottery tickets on December 25th at the Brew Store at 1203 Triview Avenue. According to court documents, she told a co-worker she had already paid for the tickets. The co-worker recorded the tickets that she took because he did not scan them, though Britton allegedly told him she had done so. Store managers filed a police report when Britton failed to pay for the tickets and fired her. Neary ordered Britton to pay restitution to the store in an amount to be determined. One of the stolen tickets was later cashed for $30. Next story, man pleads not guilty to recording sex acts with child. A Sioux City man has pleaded not guilty to having a sexual relationship with a 12-year-old girl and sending out videos of the two engaged in sex acts. Mario Reyes, 21, entered his written plea Thursday in Woodbury County District Court to charges of third-degree sexual abuse, sexual exploitation with a minor, lascivious acts with a child, indecent contact with a child, and dissemination of obscene materials to a minor. According to court documents, Reyes and the girl had been meeting since December of 2019 at his home in the 1200 block of 21st Street and engaging in sexual activity. Reyes is accused of using his phone to record videos of the sex acts and sending approximately 16 videos to others. He also has sent photos of the two naked with one another and other photos of them engaged in a sex act. Last story, a little happier one. Sioux City's Cone Park to open Wednesday. Cone Park will officially open for the winter season on Wednesday. The Sioux City Parks and Recreation Department made the announcement in a news release on Friday. Due to limited capacity and high demand, patrons are asked to purchase their tickets in advance in order to minimize ticket window lines at the park. According to the park's website, tubing sessions are slated to begin at 11 a.m., 2:30 p.m., and 6 p.m. on Wednesday. Tickets can be purchased at coneparksiouxcity.com by calling the Parks and Rec office at 712-279-6126 or by visiting the office at the Siouxland Expo Center, 550 South Lafayette Street, between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Amid the COVID-19 pandemic, masks are required at all times, both inside and outside, unless seated at a table. Indoor seating at the Cone Park Lodge will be limited to no more than 6 people of a related party per table. Cone Park patrons are also asked to adhere to CDC guidelines and practice social distancing by staying at least 6 feet away from others, about the width of 2 snow tubes. For a complete list of operating dates, hours, and rates, you can visit coneparksiouxcity.com. Next story, Friday trash collection will be delayed. Little tip for you from the Sioux City Journal staff. Garbage collection in Sioux City will be delayed one day next week and the following week for some customers due to the upcoming Christmas and New Year's holidays. The only customers who will be impacted are those residents whose trash is collected on Fridays, according to a press release from the City of Sioux City. Their trash and recycling will be collected on Saturday. Christmas and New Year's Day both fall on Friday this year. The Citizens Convenience Center at 5828 28th Street will close at noon Christmas Eve and will be closed all day Christmas Day. It will also be closed New Year's Day. Wrapping paper, boxes, and rigid plastics are accepted as recycling, but Christmas lights, ribbons, bows, and flexible plastic films are not accepted for recycling. All garbage for pickup should fit inside plastic trash cans with the lids closed. If additional space for trash is needed during the holidays, one-time use stickers for additional trash cans can be purchased at City Hall and all major grocers. Going to some entertainment on page A3, a little review. Idol's Maddie Pope offers reassurance during the Sioux City concert. And I apologize, it's Pope or Poppy? I think it's Poppy. This is by Bruce Miller. Sensing the audience was a bit uneasy, American Idol winner Maddie Poppy got her Thursday night Orpheum Theater crowd to stand up and wave their arms just after she sang her second Christmas song. "You're tense, and it's making me feel tense," she told them. Sure enough, they loosened up, helped her remember lyrics, and laughed at the stories she told without singing with Kermit the Frog, transversing the landmines in Hollywood and getting through, oh, these many months of sheltering at home. Accompanying herself on guitar, which, by the way, she's very good at, Poppy offered cuts from her EP, Christmas from Home, shared numbers she did on Idol, and provided insight into her life thanks to several originals. "Nothing good comes out of California," and Roses addressed the kind of world she faced after the hit television show. Wildflowers provided a glimpse at how others saw a young woman from Iowa. Although the song was written for her, she said it suggested 5 people live in Iowa and that were pilgrims. Poppy made her point, but the music fit nicely in her range. Never fearful of hitting those high notes, she brought an alt Kelly Clarkson vibe to the music. While many of the songs were slower than you would expect, even the covers, she sold them nicely, hinting she could have a long career in the American genre. At times, she even sounded like Bonnie Raitt. Those Christmas cuts ranged from Sleigh Ride, which, yes, she restyled, to Oh Holy Night, and providing the kind of warm feeling you might get at someone's house on Christmas Eve. She didn't dish much about Idol contestants or judges, but she did offer a rousing Going, Going, Gone, her winner's song, and talked about that Kermit collaboration. Apparently, she was the most expensive talent on the performance night, and she was probably he was probably the perfect choice for Poppy, considering she sang Rainbow Connection as her audition song. Since then, she said, friends have since been upset that others have done the same song on other competition shows. They view it as hers. If she's looking for other covers, the 24-year-old might investigate the songs Emma Stone sang in La La Land. They're in her wheelhouse, and she could sell the heck out of them. Because much of Idol is built on reimagining others' hits, Poppy had several that moved her up the ranks, Brand New Key and Homeward Bound among them. She blanked on the latter song's third verse and turned to the audience for help. They responded, thanks to Google, prompting her to admit she was glad she remembered all the words on her Idol performances. Resilient and open, Poppy helped ease that audience back into the world of live entertainment. It's going to be a while before folks feel like dancing in the aisles, but at least she showed them how to take the first steps. Got a little sports. I'll read just partials of three articles about the All-GPAC team. We'll start with Northwest's Woodell Wright's headline All-GPAC team. Northwestern led the Great Plains Athletic All-Conference volleyball team as the Red Raiders had the GPAC Player of the Year with Anna Weedle and GPAC Center of the Year with Lacey Wrights. In total, the Red Raiders, who are 15-3 overall and 13-3 in the GPAC, had three first-team selections, two second-team picks, and two honorable mentions. Whittle, who's coming off an NAIA National Player of the Year selection, led the GPAC with 3.7 kills per set as she hit 250 on the season. She also averaged 3.1 digs a set, the second most on the team. Wrights ranked third in the NAIA with 11.5 assists per set. Wrights directed the top-hitting offense in the GPAC and was also the fifth best in the NAIA. Mackenzie Fink was selected to the GPAC first team for the third time, and it is her fourth time as an all-conference pick. A.J. Kasmarinski was a second-team GPAC pick, her fourth time as an all-conference selection, as was Emily Van Ginkel, who made her third appearance in the all-GPAC. Briar Cliff leads GPAC's women's picks. After winning the team's first-ever GPAC regular season championship program history, the Briar Cliff women's soccer team has eight players named to the 2020 GPAC all-conference teams. Highlights from the honorees include Flor Suarez being named Offensive Player of the Year and Paul Cox earning Coach of the Year. Morningside's Peyton Harmon was named the GPAC Defender of the Year. Suarez, Taylor Hill, Ariana Rodriguez, Megan Siqueiros, and Ruby Campa were named First Team Selections. Gemma White and Lakeela Lunt earned Second Team Honors, while Sonia Rao was named Honorable Mention. In men's college soccer, the Mustangs, Gulge, and Huth lead the GPAC men. Iowa junior forward Okan Gulge and sophomore goalkeeper Bjarn Huth led a large Morningside College contingent on the 2020 Great Plains Athletic Conference men's soccer honors. Gulge or Olge, the league leader in goals and points and shots on goal and game-winning goals per match, was named the league's Offensive Player of the Year for a second successive season. Huth, who posted seven victories along with two shutouts in net, shared the conference's Defensive Player of the Year accolade along with Will Poynton of Hastings College. Okay, time for Dear Abby, and the first letter is from Ron in California. It's titled, Memories of Woman Cloud Devoted Dad's Happiness. Dear Abby, I have been married to my wife for 2 years after being together for 10 years. We have two kids with a third on the way. Our relationship is great. It's healthy. I just have this feeling of loneliness. I feel like I have my children and that's it. My mind often wanders to a woman from the past. I would never leave my children because they are my world. I cannot control or ignore these chronic feelings of unhappiness and loneliness. I'll be honest, I wish I could just have one conversation with said woman. I don't know what to do, signed Ron in California. Dear Ron, one conversation with the woman from your past won't fix what has gone wrong with your marriage. You have a responsibility to your wife and your growing family. What you are experiencing could be symptoms of depression. You may be feeling overwhelmed with the responsibilities you now carry and subconsciously yearning for the carefree years you enjoyed before you were formally married. Before you feel more alienated than you already do, I urge you to talk this out with a licensed psychotherapist. Next one is from Gifted in the West. Dear Abby, I have a friend who has a habit of giving me unsolicited gifts. It's little things like string lights for my patio or a small toy for my daughter, but it makes me feel obligated to give her a gift back. I would rather not be stuck in this continual gift exchange loop, especially during a pandemic when you're not supposed to be seeing people outside your household. This friend has shown up unannounced at my doorstep to drop off a gift without letting me know she's coming. The last gift she offered, I refused because it was an offensive toy that wasn't age appropriate for my daughter. Was I right to do that? How can I stop this cycle without hurting my friend's feelings? Signed, Gifted in the West. Dear Gifted, understand that this friend may not give you these gifts out of generosity, but because it gives her an excuse to interact with you. You have a right to refuse any item intended for yourself or your child that you feel is inappropriate. Jump off the gift-giving treadmill by telling this person her friendship is enough and you will no longer accept any gifts because it makes you uncomfortable. And the last story today from Staying Away to Not Get Hurt. Dear Abby, I have an older relative who uses the word whatever when she is done discussing something. I don't think she realizes how dismissive it comes across to others. It's as if she doesn't care about the other person's opinion or comments. It creates a barrier with family, and I think people distance her from her because of it. I avoid talking to her because it's so blunt and rude. How can I explain that the word now has a negative connotation and should be avoided? Signed, staying away to not get hurt. Dear staying away, address it the next time she uses whatever in conversation with you. Ask if she is using the word because she isn't interested in what you are trying to convey and what she means by it. Then explain how hearing it made you feel, because it may not have been her intent. If it was, then you too have the right to distance yourself. Taking one last look at the weather for today. Plenty of sunshine, a high of 36 degrees, wind southwest 6 to 12 miles an hour. Cloudy most of the time tonight, a low down to 22 degrees, wind south-southwest at 6 to 12. And tomorrow, warming up, mild partial sunshine, a high of 46 degrees, wind southwest at 7 to 14. A low Sunday night of 31, mostly sunny on Friday. Wind subsiding, going to be nice, 49 degrees for the high. Wind starting out at northwest 12 to 25, then dying out. Low of Monday night, 24, partly sunny and mild on Tuesday, a high of 48 degrees, 21 for the low Tuesday night. And Wednesday, cloudy, windy, and colder, a high back down to 30 degrees. And that does it for the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, December 19th, 2020. For the last hour, the stories have been selected and read by me, John Reef. All material heard on Iris is intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions, call Iris toll-free at 800-404-4747. We thank you for listening to Iris, your radio reading service.